leading a very pious and moral and religious life, straight, and show how people can live a happy life in their home with their family, leading a very pious and moral and religious life. And many people will be attracted to also follow the same way of life. Undoubtedly, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is far higher than anything else. There's no question of that. But most people are not very philosophical. They want to see practically what does any teaching do for you? How does it affect your life? And even in our own lives, if we have the highest philosophy, but we don't practice it properly, then it's not very impressive to others. We may have the highest philosophy, but if we don't practice that properly, then it's not very impressive to others. But actually, all the answers, even to material problems, are there within Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness is not simply some idealistic religious process that is divorced from practical life. But the Vedic literatures give practical directions for living in this material world as peacefully as possible, so that one can live peacefully and happily and cultivate Krishna consciousness. Everything is there in the Vedic literatures. And we'll find within Prabhupada's books, although Prabhupada's books are certainly meant for teaching the highest philosophy or the highest spiritual philosophy, but he also he writes a lot about economic, sociological, and other practical topics to help guide us in our lives. We'll find a lot in Srila Prabhupada's books about how to live in family life in a sane and contented manner. Probably Prabhupada wrote so much about this because he saw that people nowadays, they don't know even the basic principles of family life, and therefore they are suffering in various ways. But Srila Prabhupada had full faith in the Vedic culture that if people follow this, then they can live happily in family life. Now, the Vedic principles, they are certainly quite different to those of modern life. And maybe this is one of the reasons why in our movement to date, we don't have a very good record of showing what is ideal family life. Many devotees, even after marrying as devotees, they divorce. Now, this is not at all a proper standard. This is actually condemned in the Vedic literatures and by Srila Prabhupada very much so. But often we see that even devotees are supposed to be living according to higher principles, they find that their home life becomes so unpalatable that they don't see any alternative but divorce. Now, this need not be so. If we actually follow the principles, the simple principles outlined in Srila Prabhupada's books, then all problems within family life can be solved. Now, let me qualify what I just said. Let me qualify. That means to add a but or to. In other words, that's not an absolute statement. You should learn this, an important phrase to qualify a statement. No, it means that what I just said is true, but it's not fully true, and here's why. You have to learn this. It's very important. Let me explain this some more. Let me explain this, what I just said. I just said that by following the principles of Prabhupada's books, one can live free from problems within family life. But of course, the nature of the material world, and especially in family life, is that there will always be some problems. But the descriptions of Shastra tell us how to live in such a way as to minimize the problems, or if it is not possible to fully overcome them, how to live with them. Now, this is not simply theoretical. The knowledge in Shastra is meant for implementing in our practical life. We may think, sometimes devotees think that the descriptions in Prabhupada's books about ideal family life, they don't relate to the modern world. Sometimes you hear devotees say, well, Prabhupada was writing about a different time and a different age and a different culture, but it doesn't apply to the modern world. But the reason why Srila Prabhupada was able to be successful in spreading Krishna consciousness was because that he had full faith that the principles of Shastra can be applied in all times, all places, and all circumstances. And although modern Western culture is certainly very different to Vedic culture, the Vedic culture is meant for regulating human beings, and human beings have the same basic nature. The family life means the interaction between husband and wife, between male and female. And the basic male psychology and female psychology is the same everywhere, in all times, places, and circumstances. The Vedic principles, they teach how the male should interact with the female and vice versa, in a way that is most conducive to their mutual benefit. And even if someone brought up in the ledger culture of the West, if they adopt these principles, they will find that they work in their lives. And I have practical experience of this. Here in Russia, one devotee couple came to me, the first time I'd ever seen them, and told me that they would like their blessings to get divorced. So I told them, no way. And I preached to them that if you want to be devotees, you have to follow the principles of Shastra. And even if you throw every pot and pan in the kitchen at each other every day, you can't divorce. But actually there are certain modes of behavior by which you can live more peacefully, and you won't even think of divorcing. And even if you don't like each other, if you just accept that it's against the principles of religion to divorce, therefore we have to live with each other, then somehow or other you will adjust to each other. So they gave up the idea of divorcing. And then automatically their whole relationship became better, and they started living more peacefully. As long as they were thinking that we can divorce, they thought, well, you know, what does it matter? We'll chastise each other and act very badly with each other. And then, you know, we'll just divorce, finished. But as soon as they thought that, you know, well, you know, now we have to live with each other somehow or other, then they started behaving better towards each other. And this is, you know, several years later, they're much more settled in their family life. They decided to have another child, which they did, and they're going on with their Krishna consciousness. In other words, there's no need for them to divorce, but just because they thought the possibility was there, therefore they didn't care to properly interact with each other. Now, in another case, in Russia also, one middle-aged lady came to me with her two sons and complained about her husband. And he's a big demon, and he beats me all the time, and he's against Krishna consciousness, and I want to divorce him. But I told her that's not a very good idea, because the sons, they need the father. That even if your husband is not such a nice guy, at least he's a father, he's an authority figure for them. So I told her to learn from the examples in Shastra how to pacify her husband. And this is all explained in Srila Prabhupada's books, especially the example of Chyavan Muni, and he was very old and very irritable, and his wife was a young, beautiful princess. But circumstantially, she had to be married to him, even though, you know, she would probably like to have married a young and handsome prince. This story is given in the 9th canto of Bhagavatam. So the princess Sukanya, after marriage, she thought that, well, by the will of Providence, by the will of God, I'm married to this Chyavan Muni. So I have to serve him and to take the role of a proper wife. And in the Vedic culture, the wife takes the role of the maidservant of her husband. She may also be his advisor. She may sometimes act like a mother. She serves all different kinds of feminine roles in various circumstances. But it's very much emphasized that she should take a subordinate role. And Prabhupada explains that in this, this is a very good example, this story of Chyavan and Sukanya, that by the male psychology, the man always wants to consider himself the boss. So in the case of Chyavan Muni, he was very irritable by nature, always getting angry. Any small mistake, he would get angry. And even sometimes no mistake, he'd also get angry. So Prabhupada said that, he explained that if Sukanya had also become angry and argued with him and fought with him, then their whole family life would have been extremely unpalatable. But instead she tolerated his excesses and went on serving him very carefully and attentively to the best of her ability. And thus, by her sweet behavior, she conquered his heart, and then he cooled down, and he wasn't so irritable. So Prabhupada writes in purport that this is victory for a woman, that even if her husband is as irritable as Chavan Muni, if she doesn't also become irritable but remains very sweet in her behavior, then she can conquer her husband by sweetness. But Prabhupada wrote that people in the modern age, they don't know this and they don't follow this principle. And therefore, no one is happy in family life. And therefore, there are so many divorces. So I explained all these things to this lady and said that your husband, he may be like some big brute, but you have to try and tame him by your sweet behavior. So she did. And she calmed him down, and now he's also... I mean, he's a follower of Islam, but he comes to Krishna conscious programs and he's not against her following. And the family life has become quite balanced. So these are two examples, and there are more, I'm just giving two, but these are just two examples I've seen how by instructing devotees to follow the principles in Prabhupada's books, that they work right now in the modern day and age, in modern society. Now, what to do if it doesn't work? What if someone is trying their best to be nice to their husband or wife, but still they're not cooperating or whatever? Well, even then, divorce is not an alternative. For one thing, it's sinful, because marriage is sacred, either in the Christian rites or Islamic rites or Vedic rites. Marriage means it's consecrated in the eyes of God. In Islam, there is allowance for divorce, but it's not actually encouraged. And in original Christianity, divorce is also forbidden. The Roman Catholic Church still maintains a strong stance against divorce, even though many of their followers don't like this, because even they understand that, you know, if you just hop from one partner to another, it's not even human life, it's just like animal life. So even if there's difficulty in family life, which there will be in even in the best of circumstances, one is enjoined to tolerate the difficulty with the understanding that anyway life is very short. Whatever situation we are in, well, we're in it, and there's no use to make so many drastic changes. Whatever situation we're in, we should accept it and go on chanting Hare Krishna. Also understanding that, you know, whatever situation we're in, we have to make the best of it. It may not be an ideal situation, but we have to discharge the responsibilities that we have taken on by entering into marriage. It is said that marriage is a license for sense gratification, but the license brings with it responsibility. Just like if you get a driving license, that means you're given a license because it's expected that you'll behave as a responsible driver and follow all the rules, all the traffic rules, and drive safely with consideration for other drivers, for pedestrians, and for passengers. So entering into marriage is a very serious responsibility. It's not that we should think, well, let me try it out, and if I don't like it, I'll try again some other place. So it's some other person. But marriage is for life. Of course, in the Vedic system, one is expected at the end of life to enter into vanaprastha life or maybe sannyas. But at least during the years when one's children are growing up, one has to be very responsible towards them and look after them. And even if one isn't very well adjusted with his or her spouse, then somehow you have to adjust and go on discharging the responsibilities. Just like we see Srila Prabhupada in his family life, he actually wasn't very satisfied with his wife. She was also a devotee. It wasn't that she was a big demon or anything. She drank tea, she started drinking tea at some point, which wasn't very pleasing to Prabhupada. And she wasn't particularly interested in helping Prabhupada with his... She didn't share Prabhupada's preaching vision, but she also worshipped Krishna in home, and she was happy to do that. But Prabhupada, you know, he had the mood of a dynamic preacher. But at the same time, even though he had the mood of a dynamic preacher, and although his wife didn't share that vision, he didn't neglect to support his wife and children. He worked hard throughout his life to earn money to support his family. Prabhupada's sister was also initiated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But she was married to a fish eater. Most people in Bengal fish, unfortunately. So due to the social conditions, she had no choice but to cook fish. Although she was brought up in a family of pure devotees, and she never personally had fish in her life. But due to the position she found herself in, she had no choice but to follow that social obligation of serving her husband in that way. So anyway, she cooked separately for herself and offered and took prasada, and she went on chanting Hare Krishna throughout her life. So these are examples of two very great devotees, both male and female, who, despite having an uncomplying spouse, accepted their position and went on with Krishna consciousness. They discharged their family responsibilities and went on with Krishna consciousness. And in this way, showed the example that of tolerating adverse circumstances in family life without constantly fighting or condemning the other partner. They discharged their family duties and went on in Krishna consciousness. Of course, there may be cases where the spouse is actively and strongly opposed to the other spouse's practicing Krishna consciousness. And even in such circumstances, it by tolerant and sweet behavior, it may be possible to come to some normal position. Of course, I mean, every family situation is very different, so we can only speak general principle. How these are practically applied in our lives, and that will vary from person to person, circumstance to circumstance. But basically, the husband should take the role of the leader of the family. It is his responsibility to financially support the family. The wife may also help with that, although it's not generally recommended that women work outside in a job, because they're needed to be at home to look after the children. If the wife is also working, then it's difficult for her to properly look after the husband and children, and she becomes under too much stress, and then difficult for her to be sweet. So it's also required that the children, especially, they need their mother's attention more than their father's attention, especially in the early years. But even in teenage years, children, they need lots of affection and attention, especially from their mothers. So it's best if the woman can stay at home, look after the home, keep it clean, wash the clothes, cook nicely. Cooking nicely is an important quality for a woman. As is said in English, and I think also in Russian, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So Prabhupada understood this. He said that the daughters of our devotees, they should be trained in two things, most important. He said one thing, they should cook very nicely, so that after offering to Krishna, they can feed their husbands and children very nice prasad. And he said they should be trained so that they will be very chaste and faithful to their husband. Prabhupada said if the daughters of our devotees trained like this, I will personally arrange that they get a first-class husband. So the wife can also contribute to the to the income of the family, but from the home is better. It's better. Of course, modern society is so complex that it's difficult. Sometimes it may seem that the wife is forced to go out and get a job, but there are ways of making income living at home also. For instance, by knitting, cooking items that can be sold outside, keeping bees, various home handicraft. So these are traditional income-producing activities. These are income-producing activities that traditionally women perform at home. Now, of course, we don't have this training. We come from a very different kind of society. And without that training, you see that many people in the modern age, they're poorly psychologically or socially equipped. They're not properly socially or psychologically equipped to be a good husband or wife. But nevertheless, despite our considerable lack of qualification, if we follow the basic Vedic guidelines, that can make our family life much more functional. So in a nutshell, is that he should take responsibility for the family. He should be the guru of the family, and as much when it's said that he should be the guru, that doesn't mean he sits in a jnasi sam in front of the room and has everyone wash his feet all the time. Although actually, still in some parts of India, the way he acts under the guidance of his guru, that the father acts, the husband and father acts under the guidance of his guru, and under the in the association of and under the guidance of other devotees. So that is the role of that. Because even if the husband is very responsible and the wife is very submissive and chaste, without Krishna consciousness, there's no particular meaning to it anyway. So husband and wife come together in Krishna consciousness for the sake of developing Krishna consciousness together, responsible to each other to help each other to maintain proper standards of sadhana. It can be difficult in family life to balance the responsibilities of earning money and social responsibilities with those of properly practicing sadhana. But devotees have to be intelligent enough and determined and sincere enough to perform the activities of Krishna consciousness within their homes. As it is said in English, it's a forgotten saying, but it's a relevant saying, that a family that prays together stays together. Now they're not praying together and they're not staying together. They don't think praying together is important, and they don't think staying together is important either. So in the Krishna conscious movement, we want to set a better example to human society that we can do by following the principles of Shastra. So please do it, those of you who are Grihasthas. I can only talk about it. I can't do it. It's up to you. For those of you, and there may be many present who have been through the turmoil of ruptured family life and divorce, well, what to do? You're not condemned for that. But now that we've come to Krishna consciousness, we should follow that in whichever position we may be in. And even though we may not have been able to follow those principles in our lives due to not knowing about them before coming to Krishna consciousness, we should certainly encourage others who are in Krishna consciousness to live a very responsible family life and not follow the path of the asuras by breaking the Vedic injunctions and spoiling their family life. So I can take one or two questions before the administrator of this hall throws us out. But I just have to go to the bathroom in the meantime. So I'll just come in 5 minutes. In the meantime, you can tell them about the books, and then you just tell them questions they could write them. So that means this is predicted in Srimad Bhagavatam for Kali Yuga. Svikara eva chodvahe. That's simply,
you want to get married? Yeah, okay.
This is marriage in Kali Yuga. Svikara, just by acceptance, mutual acceptance. So marriage, as I was discussing in the lecture, that means that which is sanctified by a religious process. Of course, there is also among the eight types of marriage discussed in the Vedic literature, one is Gandharva Vivaha, which means by acceptance also, just by mutual acceptance. But that also, Gandharva Vivaha is also, that it should be mutual acceptance on religious principles. That means for the purpose of executing dharma. So even if one has entered into a formal marriage according to government registration, then having come to Krishna consciousness, you should think of it as a commitment that should be executed under religious principles.
There's an opinion there cannot be any balance between spiritual and material side in the family life. We should choose either this or that. But you mentioned that this balance can be found and should be found. Please advise how can we attain this balance, as practically we are not... Yeah, practically we are either prone either to spiritual or more to spiritual or material side. Okay.
Well, whoever gave the opinion that there can't be a balance may be a very great social philosopher, but they are an atheist because they don't have faith in the Vedic principles, which give directions for living family life in such a way that one can make spiritual progress, and is therefore known as Grihastha Ashram. Balance means that one has to make the determination that alongside our material responsibilities, we have to execute our spiritual responsibility. We see that materialistic householders, they have time for watching TV, reading the newspaper and magazine, socializing and drinking with their friends, sleeping 8 to 10 hours or more a day. So a Krishna-conscious householder doesn't do all these things, but he saves time that would be otherwise misspent for engaging in activities of Krishna consciousness. Now there's another question here. What do we do for success in sadhana if we have 2 children, small children? Admittedly, it's difficult because small children, they demand the attention of their mothers practically 24 hours a day. So it's not possible for mothers with young children to have the regulated sadhana that, for instance, from 4 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock, they'll only concentrate on sadhana because they have to look after their children also. Prabhupada wrote to one devotee. She had been serving as a pujari, but then she had a child, and Prabhupada wrote that now your most important service is to look after your children and bring them up in Krishna consciousness. He said that no more deity worship, now you should do child worship. So that is your austerity, that it's not possible to have a very regulated sadhana if you have young children. But you have to do the best you can. Okay. In traditional families, as I was saying yesterday, there are many branches of the family all live together, so all the women could help each other look after the children. So one possibility is whoever asked this question about if your mother is favorable, then maybe you could live with her or bring her to live with you. You also have to look after the children. Otherwise, you have to do the best you can under the circumstances. Chant sometime. The children also sleep sometime. But you also have to accept that it may not be possible for you to have ideal sadhana for some time. You have to live with that. Just like traveling sannyasis, they can't always have ideal sadhana. Not all the time, but many times they're traveling during the morning hours, or they're very tired from traveling during that time, they may be very tired from traveling. Or often devotees living in temples, especially managers, they may have many pressures that even during the morning when they should be performing sadhana, there are pressing duties. So we have to adjust the best we can under adverse circumstances. At least you can come to festivals like this from time to time and get a good boost in Krishna consciousness. And then when you're older, your children are older, then you'll have more time for all these things. I'm also thinking when I'm older, I may retire to Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna all day. But not now. I have other duties now. So you have other duties, so fulfill them, and at the same time, be Krishna conscious as best as you can under the circumstances. Tell your children about Krishna. Tell them to chant Hare Krishna. Krishna will help you if you are sincere. Okay, I'll take one more question and then... If we can also take more questions tomorrow.
So I can keep this?
Yeah.
Should a brahmachari plan his future family life? When should he think about this?
Yeah, read it out. Yeah, it's good to think about it. It's better than one day thinking, oh, I'm not going to be a brahmachari, okay, tomorrow I'll get married. It's better than just suddenly rushing into marriage. One reason why in traditional societies, and especially in Indian society, that marriage is basically, they generally go quite smoothly. One of the many reasons is because they are very carefully planned in advance. Now, it's not necessary that every unmarried young man get married, although practically we see that most of them do. So it's good to make a decision at some point in time. At latest by the age 30, one should decide whether to remain unmarried or to marry. It's very good training before entering family life to live as a brahmachari, completely dedicating himself in the service of Guru and Krishna. But one should enter into family life being prepared, both mentally and economically. Exactly how to do that, one should consult with his seniors, maybe senior grihasthas in the area. Okay. Now, there seem to be quite a lot of questions about this, so I'm not going to answer them now, but we can keep them for tomorrow. I'm going to speak on some other aspects of Vaishnava culture tomorrow, and I'll leave some time for answering these questions also tomorrow. So in the meantime, if anyone would like to take these books, please do. That will help me in my service of preaching by writing. I just want to make one point about Vaishnava etiquette that just came to my mind. Those who are kind enough to make garlands, please don't give them when they're wet. Don't give wet garlands. Apart from being uncomfortable, who wants to wear a wet garland? They just get all wet. But they also stain the wet garland, and the juice of the flower comes out and stains the